Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto talking to you from Dallas, Texas, where we're about to get a heck of a storm. It's going to be one of those storms that you're probably going to be hearing about tomorrow morning when you tune in for the national news. It's just going to be a heavy one tonight. So pray for us here in Dallas. We get these storms in the spring, and they are really something else. We got our friend Don Serber on the line. How are you, Don?
Oh, I'm doing fine, and we're getting ready for possible floods here in Polk, West Virginia.
Is that right? We get these type of storms in the spring, in April and May, They are really, they can be very rough, these storms.
Yeah, we've been known to have floods. Our floods don't last like yours do. It's just gully washers, and you don't want your gully washed, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
They can be devastating. In fact, that's why we came up with FEMA. And Jennings Randolph was our senator for many years, and he started FEMA after one of the big floods devastated the community, and there was no help. So that's what he did.
Now, that's interesting. What year would that have been?
Oh, I don't know.
Roughly.
About 1978.
Okay. Because that name rang a bell. Of course, it's always been Senator Byrd. One of the two has always been Senator Byrd for such
work. We've got another one, Rockefeller. Do you realize we've only had three senators in the last 50 years?
Now, let me ask you, that's an interesting point about Rockefeller. Is he part of the Rockefeller family, or is this just a coincidence?
Oh, yeah, John Davison Rockefeller IV.
Oh, okay.
His grandfather was the old man, yeah.
I didn't know that. I mean, I thought it was just a coincidence. But, okay, so that's how did he end up? Is he kind of, I mean, it's just.
Jack Kennedy came to West Virginia, and it was a major state for him. He saw the poverty. And he decided to do some anti-poverty programs. That was actually the beginning of the Great Society there, food stamps and that type of thing. And they had what they called VISTA volunteers. So you got all these people to volunteer, and Rockefeller's young and came here and liked it and decided to become R. Kennedy. And of course, his uncle Winthrop had done a similar thing down in Arkansas, where he was governor there for a while.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that connection. Yeah, that's an interesting one. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you, speaking of spring, I predicted that the Indians would win the American League East, the American League pennant. Last year they came within a game, but I really like that club. That's a really nice club. I'm going to stick with my prediction. I think they're going to win the American League pennant.
They should. They'll play the Brewers in the World Series, and it'll be all home games for the Indians. As you recall, last year we had played.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And in the movie Major League, which to everybody else in the world is a movie, but to the Indians fans it's a documentary.
That's great. That's great.
The stadium games, the home games, they were filmed at County Stadium, not Cleveland Stadium, because they couldn't schedule around the Cleveland Browns plant. But they could schedule around. You know, there's no football team playing, so they filmed the exteriors there in the fall. Yeah, so we like that. And the other movie that we like in Cleveland that was shot, actually part of it in Cleveland, was A Christmas Story. So,
that's right. That's right. That is so interesting because last Christmas, that's one of my favorite movies, and they were running that movie over and over in one of the channels, and between the scenes, they were talking about, there's like a museum in Cleveland, right? Where the house...
Actually, it's in San Diego, of all places. But yes, there is a museum to it. And you could have bought the house that was that they used for the exteriors. It's right in the near the flats in the old steel mill area where the sky used to be orange. But they've gone back to blue skies. And that house, there was actually a real house. You could have bought it for like $125,000. Somebody put it up for sale. Somebody bought it.
You know, that's really funny. That movie, of course, it's based on I think it's a fellow named Shepard, right?
Yeah.
who wrote those stories. That's right. And when my kids were a little younger, about 10 years ago, we used to watch, we had two of those movies. We had A Christmas Story, and then there was another one, too, that was made about that little boy Ralphie that the movie's about. And my kids used to call that movie Ralphie, the Ralphie movie. That's what we used to call it. And for years, that was the Ralphie movie. That's what we used to watch. And it was a great movie. It was a really good good movie. But, no, we'll check again during the course of the baseball season. But I'm sticking with the Indians. I really think that they're going to be this is going to be their year. It was almost last year. They won 96 games, as you know.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to make it this year. You know, just a couple of things. The last time we spoke, it was right, I think it was the day after Iowa or the day before Iowa. And, you know, I went back and I listened to that show, and I think it's interesting how things have changed in 3 months,
Don. Yes, they have. They have.
They really have.
It's been a great, great fun thing to watch. What's happening in Iowa, it turned out that it was South Carolina, not Iowa, that was the key. Barack Obama winning South Carolina has set him up, and, of course, John McCain in South Carolina. It's interesting how this is playing out. This is fascinating.
Yeah, I made myself...
Rudy and Hillary last year, remember?
That's right. That's exactly right.
And McCain was supposed to be out by last August. I remember writing him off, you know, but he came back. Maybe
no, I tell you. In fact, I was going to ask you. I'm going to ask you here some questions, but I want to talk about the Republicans quickly because there's a lot more fun to talk about the Democrats these days. But how do you think McCain is doing specifically? Some of those ads that they've been running, I think they're great. I mean,
yeah,
what about you?
They're good ads, but he's really up against it. Obama just raised $40 million in March. That's like a whole, that's like half of what John McCain's got left. You know, he's really up against it on the money. You watch what's happening in Pennsylvania. Hillary had a double-digit lead. She's going to lose Pennsylvania big time because he's got... For every dollar she spends on TV, he spends four. He is buying the election. Somebody's buying the election for him. And I'll tell you, it's starting to be a little bit interesting. It's scary, and you're not going to be able to criticize the guy because he's black. And if you criticize him, you're going to be racist. This is a scary thing going on here.
Now, do you get a lot of concerned about that? Yeah, do you get a lot of the, I mean, you're right next to Pennsylvania, so do you hear a lot of the ads or get a lot of the ads on TV?
No, actually, West Virginia is weird. You have all the hills and where the space, it looks like it's, you know, you put your finger there and you say, oh, that's only, it's right, Charleston's right close to Pennsylvania. Well, no, the hills sort of keep the signals from crossing. You know about VHF TV?
Yes.
You know, the 2-13. We had, up until very, very recently, we had nothing but VHF stations because the signals couldn't get through the hills. So, you know, each area had its own, there wasn't any spillover, so you could have a whole bunch of single-digit stations all over the place. But, it's interesting. I understand that. Now, of course, there's spillover up north, but I don't get much of a feel for the Pennsylvania race other than I think it's going to go big time for Obama. I think it's going to be a big win for him.
That would be a real shocker because she had quite a lead. And you're right.
I mean, you could buy the election with the ads, and that's going to really take a lot of wind out of the sail for McCain. He's starting. I think people are respecting. He's got a nice game plan here to sell his biography. You are very impressed with his ads, are you not?
Yes, I think they're great, yeah.
And what about his politics? Do you like McCain-Feingold?
No, that one I don't like.
Okay, and what about his immigration policy?
That one I had a problem with, but...
What did you think of the Gang of 14?
Well, that one was a bit weird, although the argument that they had back then was that that's how they were able to get all those judges confirmed. That was
the
argument.
Absolutely right on that. But what I'm trying to point out, those are the three things that conservatives dislike about him. Now, he's right on the Gang of 14. That was how the Democrats could save face, basically. That's all that was about. But people don't like McCain-Feingold for good reason. It's an embarrassment on the First Amendment. And then they don't like the McCain-Kyle-Kennedy immigration bill. But what he's doing with these biography ads is he's not backing down on those issues, but he's winning back conservatives by saying, look, I paid my dues. I'm a guy you can trust as your commander-in-chief. That's what he's doing. That's what he's going. He's playing to the base there. He's not playing to the base on policies. He's playing to it on, I am your defense conservative. I am your national security conservative. And that's winnable. And that's the man who's mature. That's the man who knows the politics. He's not going to give up what he thinks believes in, but he's willing to show you what you need to show. You know, his priorities are national security first. It's very interesting, and I think it's working.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, and here's a very personal reflection. I have two boys in college, and I have a young one in high school. Mm-hmm. And today I drove him to school as I do every morning, and he was telling me he's pretty sure he's going to join the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I was driving back to school, I said to myself, you know, if there's I would rather have him serving under Commander-in-Chief McCain
mm-hmm.
than Commander-in-Chief Obama. And that's what this is going to come down to, I think, for a lot of us.
Well, it'll come down to that for a lot of us. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be the majority. I really, this guy worries me. If you look at his Chicago record, he's well into that Chicago political machine. And I'm starting to sound paranoid, but really seriously, I have some major problems with his politics. With Hillary, we know what we're getting. It's the devil we know. And I don't think she could win. I don't think she could win dog catcher anymore. I think I think the people of New York, after this is over, I think they're going to vote her out.
Yeah, this thing with Bosnia really, I think, has hurt her a lot, don't you think? Yeah, I mean, this has really hurt her a lot. Let me just ask you one quick question about McCain. Who would you pick as the VP?
Mitt Romney.
Yeah, so would I, yeah.
Simply money. It's simply money. He needs it, and he doesn't have it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you on that. I would like to see Romney as well. Now,
one other thing about Romney. The Republicans are in deep trouble across the country. Western states particularly are a problem. But when you consider that five of our 100 senators are Mormon, and they're all from the West, they include Harry Reid and Orrin Hatch and those guys, Romney has a lot of support among the Mormons. They're going to vote for him. And it would help him carry the West, as well as do well in, I think, Michigan and Massachusetts. I didn't mean to talk over you like that.
No, that's all right. That's a very interesting analysis there. That's a very interesting analysis because I think Romney, the reason I like Romney a lot is because I think he would be able to focus McCain a little bit on the economy issue, which I think Romney can discuss that one quite well. Let me just quickly jump to the Democrats here. Jane Fonda endorses Obama. That kind of ties into what you were saying a minute ago, huh?
Oh gosh, yeah, it's the goofy. She's a ditz. Come on, you know, she is also a red flag for Vietnam veterans, and they really, you have the person who was in Hanoi riding the anti-aircraft radar on one side, and on the other side you have the guy who was shot down in over Hanoi and was spent 5.5 years in a POW camp. I think there's a little bit of a difference there, and I think it's very symbolic and very revealing. Now, of course, you can't blame Obama for who supports him, but that certainly has to backfire on him.
I don't think that you're going to see a lot of Jane Fonda making public appearances with Obama. I don't think
she may make public appearances, but it won't be with him. You're right.
I have a feeling that that's not going to work. A couple of other articles you wrote that were not necessarily about the election, but were really, really interesting. It really caught my attention, and I wanted to just kind of go over them a little bit. Ethanol, you wrote a very interesting post about ethanol, and, you know, everybody was gung-ho on ethanol a couple of years ago, but it seems like there are some unintended consequences on ethanol, aren't there?
There are. The first unintended consequence is that it's not as good as gasoline. It requires more resources to convert the corn into ethanol, which the corn is terrible for ethanol. It's not enough sugar in it, and the sugar is what the energy is. What you want is sugar. You know, sugar beets, we could grow them anywhere in the country. They're much better. Brazil uses sugar cane for its ethanol, and Brazil's very good at it. So do we import ethanol from Brazil? No, we charge 50 cents a gallon, a tariff on it. And meanwhile, we're subsidizing this corn. The corn requires fertilizer, requires lots of land. The fertilizer from corn is creating a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. As it runs down the Mississippi into the Gulf of Mexico. And it's about one-third the size. This dead zone is said to be about one-third the size of West Virginia. And it's in the middle of the Mexican, the Gulf of Mexico. It also takes corn from feedstock. That raises your price of your beef and your chicken. And as the prices of those go up, there's less demand for them, so we have fewer cattle, less livestock, and that raises the price of the livestock, of the meat even more. They've had the plants, chicken plants, close in North Carolina because of the drop in demand. It's interesting.
So that is interesting, yeah.
It's not what people thought it would be, and it's really a terrible thing to. It's not very good. I don't, because I live in West Virginia. We don't have the same. We meet EPA standards, so we don't have to do the things that you have to do with your gasoline. And we could get gasoline that's not has no methanol in it. And I avoid methanol stations. You know, they have 10% ethanol. I just avoid them.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the Gulf of Mexico, and one of the countries that has really been impacted by the increase in corn is Mexico itself, because obviously corn is a big part of their diet with the tortillas, and the prices has gone up significantly. That's creating a lot of social problems down there.
Well, I can imagine. Plus, yeah, if all those people going back home because of jobs here, and they don't want to be caught illegal up here anymore, and that's a mess. And the tendency is to go to socialism. That's going to be a mess for the United States if that happens.
Well, what happens down there is that they subsidize corn because of tortillas. And for years they were subsidizing, and tortillas were very cheap because of the government subsidy. But now they're getting to the point where the government, I mean, it's really getting very difficult for the government to subsidize it because the price of corn is going up so much. And it's a real...
getting the money off the oil. Huh.
That's it. So
it's the oil cheaper.
Yeah.
More Mexican. Actually, most of our oil, doesn't it come out of Mexico and Canada rather than the Middle East?
Well, that's what I had always, it's funny, I checked into that the other day, and much of it comes from Alberta up in Canada.
Yeah.
And the second source is Mexico, and then I think the third source is Saudi Arabia. But it's interesting how ethanol has all of a sudden, it's not what we thought it would be, and that's, maybe there's a lesson there that sometimes something can look so good, but it doesn't turn out that way.
Yeah, if it looks too good to be true, guess what?
It isn't.
Too good to be true.
Exactly right.
That is one of the rules of journalism. You know, I'm a newspaper man. One of the things that you learn about in newspapers, and I suggest everybody should try to work for a newspaper for about 6 months to a year and then go on to whatever they're going to do with their life. It's very eye-opening. But you learn these little simple, silly rules. If it looks too good to be true, it's too good to be true. And you apply these to everything.
What's that phrase out of journalism? Said too good to check. Isn't that another phrase?
Well, there's from the old Chicago News Bureau. If your mother says she loves you, check it out.
Couple of other
those guys never had to run a correction. I'll tell you, they were tough editors. They, you know, they chewed their cigars. They never lit them because they didn't want to. You know, they were going to lose the cigar, and they just burned it into these guys. You know, get the facts right. We need them. We need them. Maybe the bloggers and the internet will be our new Chicago News Bureau, where we have to force people to tell the truth.
Let's hope so. A couple of other very interesting posts that you wrote that really caught my attention, and one was about school dropouts.
Yeah.
And, of course,
well, I'm a high school dropout, and I'm not proud of it. That was a big mistake on my part. But you know what? We're spending $10,000 a kid to $8,000 to $10,000, depends on the jurisdiction, to send them to school. They don't want to go to school. Let them go.
Yeah, because we have this huge problem, and down, you know, in the inner cities, 30% of the kids are, they don't want to be in school, it seems like, many of them. And I tend to agree with you.
Yeah, it's 16 years old. Go out and get a job, you know. And people go, that'll cause problems. Well, yeah, it'll cause problems for them, not for society. You have to, like, kids, you have kids who are in college and grown and one in high school. You know what it's like. They don't want to go to school. You can't lead a horse to water and get him to drink until he's thirsty. You know, let him walk.
No, I think you're, you know, on that one. That particular editorial of yours really caught my attention, because we got people torturing themselves about these kids dropping out of school. And my thinking is, you know what? If they don't want to be in school, let them go out and get a job. Let them do something. I think a lot of them will go back to school once they figure out.
Yeah.
That it reminds me of the story that my dad always told us when we were going to school, you know, back when we were in high school. My dad always told us a story of when he was growing up. He had a friend whose dad had a sugar mill.
Mm-hmm.
And the son said that he didn't want to go to school, so the dad said, okay, just come down to the sugar field and you can cut sugar cane. So the kid did it for a couple of days and went back to his dad and said, you know, I think I'll go back to school, Dad. So maybe
the guy,
that's
the guy had a very smart dad, and now you know why he owned the sugar fields, because he's smart.
That's right. So, you know, maybe there's something. Maybe the kids need a little bit of that. The other post that you wrote that was really interesting. I as you can tell, I really enjoy reading your blog. It's a wonderful blog.
It's the best in the
blog. That's right. That's right. I said it was the best, and you're still up there. But you wrote something about presidential children that I thought was interesting. It kind of ties into...
That's my column today, yeah.
Yeah, and it ties...
the column on Thursday. The thought on that was... we've got... And Chelsea Clinton's coming to town tomorrow. I didn't realize that when I wrote it. But you have all these people saying, oh, you know, they shouldn't ask her about Monica Lewinsky. Oh. She's 28 years old. If she doesn't know it by now, then she's dumber than a rock, and I don't think she's dumber than a rock. She knows about it. She should be susceptible to the question. I think if you're 18 or older, you're an adult, and you want to be in the campaign, you get to be asked these embarrassing questions. Megan McCain is 23. She's a graduate of Columbia, and she's one of the daughters of McCain. And she's gave an interview to GQ. If you get a chance to look it up, it was interesting. She's a little bit wild, but she looks like she can handle herself. It's interesting. Yeah, these are our, we don't have a royalty, but we have presidential kids. And,
but it seems to me that if Chelsea Clinton is going to go out and start taking, you know, real shots at President Bush and getting partisan with her criticism, then when she does that, she goes into the arena, and she has to expect questions. Now, it's one thing, you know, I've always been a very strong believer that, you know, you don't touch the families. But when the families get into the partisan fight, and when they're sitting there and they're shooting, well, you got to shoot back at them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, she's been saying some terrible things about President Bush, Chelsea Clinton. So, I mean, if she's going to make statements like that, then I think people have the right to ask her about, hey, you know, Monica Lewinsky. I mean, that's a perfectly legitimate subject.
And what's funny is the questions that, from there's only been two college kids that have asked it. They've been very meek about it. I mean, they haven't been Mike Wallace about it. They haven't done ambush interviews with her and And they've asked her the question, and, you know, it is a legitimate thing because you are judging her mother on how her, you know, her mother keeps talking about being the co-president. Well, you know, this was the biggest thing that happened in his presidency was he got caught in perjury in a sexual harassment.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. Well, as always, the time flies, and 27 minutes have gone by so fast. It's always so much fun to talk to you. But isn't that amazing how it just flies? But
it really
does. So,
well, this is fun. I enjoyed it. And
I do, too. And we'll do this. I like to do this about every quarter with you.
Okay.
I'm a little bit more optimistic, and maybe I don't know. Maybe
I'm
just
pessimistic.
But I'm more optimistic about McCain because I keep looking at Obama and Reverend Wright, and I think that's going to be a huge problem in the general election. I really do.
Well, it's unfortunate, but that probably will. You know, you're probably right. I tend to form opinions quickly and then abandon them quickly and move on to the next subject.
Okay. Well, let's hope you're not that way with the Indians.
Oh, no. Indians, I'm always true with them.
Okay.
The Indians, not, you're talking, that's different. That is something I really, really care about. But
that's right. You guys did fairly well in basketball. You did fairly well in football, West Virginia. So you've had a pretty good sports year out there.
Yeah, we have. We have. And, you know, if we'd have beat Pitt, and we didn't beat Pitt because we got an idiot for a coach, and he's gone now, so he's Michigan's problem. That's how I look at it. But we would have been in the national championship game, and LSU would have beat us.
You know, it's funny. I got to tell you, that's right. I got to tell you a little March Madness story.
Mm-hmm.
With my two sons going to Texas A&M, my wife and I and our younger son, we drove out there because it was Easter the next day, Easter Sunday.
Uh-huh.
So we drove out to see them, and we watched the Texas A&M UCLA game that went that was decided like at the last minute. UCLA won, and it was a great game for 59 for no, it was a great game for 39 minutes. You know what I mean? And then they lost in the last minute. But it was really sad because you're watching the game with your sons and all these other college kids, and they all get very pumped up, and they're all very excited, and then comes the downer, you know,
yeah.
The last minute when they lose the game. And you could tell those kids were really, I mean, it's great to be young, you know.
Yeah, it's great to be young, and it'll be fun if Obama goes down to see all those young people, you know,
we'll see how that one works. We'll touch base around July 4th and see how it looks then. You know, we'll see how that convention in Denver looks. It's going to be a lot of fun. But thank you very much for your time. Keep up your great writing, and we love it. And we'll touch base again.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Don.
Okay,
we really appreciate your time. Well, that was Don Serber. Every time we talk to Don, of course, the time flies. And here we are with about 2 or 3 minutes to go in a 30-minute show. And it's just amazing. He's such an interesting fellow, and I would really recommend that you check his he writes a blog. And he also writes a column, like he was saying, on Thursdays. But one of the great things about his blog is that you get all these articles from these other – I mean, you can read his blog and you can check a bunch of different articles that other people are writing. And the one thing that I really like about Don Serber's blog is the fact that he has a wonderful sense of humor, as you can tell from some of his comments. So we'll be checking with him, as we always do every quarter. This is Silvio Canto, and I'm going to wrap it up here April 3rd, Thursday. As I said before, we're going to be getting a lot of rain. I'm kind of glad that we're not getting it now, because every time it rains, or sometimes when it rains here in Dallas, it rains so hard that we lose our electrical connections. So I'm kind of glad that it didn't happen in the middle of the show, because I probably would have been disconnected off the air. We've got a couple of interesting shows next week. On Thursday the 10th, which is a week from today, we're going to be talking to our friend Alan Wall, and he's from Mexico, and he's going to be talking to us a little bit about what's happening in the north of Mexico, a lot of military operations there. And on Tuesday, I'm not exactly sure who will be on the show, but we will we'll probably be talking politics just like we did with Don. Thank you very much for listening. This is Silvio Canto. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.